Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome back, 306. It's the second hour of the Mark Reardon Show. Just to close out, a couple of thoughts on Kyle Rittenhouse from the last hour. Somebody pointed this out on Twitter. I can't remember if I retweeted this or not yesterday, but I think it's something I agree with. And that's that if Kyle Rittenhouse, you know, as horrific as what happened there happened with him and these other two people who were shot dead, if he's not eventually found guilty, if he's acquitted on all counts, which again, I'm pretty sure that he will be, there's going to be rioting, right? But whose fault is that going to be? Is that going to be President Trump's fault? Is it going to be the criminal justice system's fault? Or could it possibly be the fault of reporters who have misled the public, really, about everything involved here with all these cases? It's stunning to me how many facts are left out. There's no attempt whatsoever, none whatsoever, to at least present maybe just a portion of the alternative version of the story, which actually has been captured on video. So, and that's what's going to happen. There's going to be more violence. There's going to be more looting. You know, I think that if you expect that this stuff's going to go away anytime soon, it's just simply not. Whether Donald Trump is the president or Joe Biden, what's going to happen when Joe Biden's the president if that happens? You think this will go away? This is happening. The left is telling you this is only happening because Trump is in office. Well, I don't think he was in office when Mike Brown was shot, right? And we know what happened there. All right, so let me get to some other stuff related to the election. So this was interesting, and you know, I think a lot of us have realized that the fact checkers at the Washington Post or even Snopes or PolitiFact can't be trusted with a lot of these things. It'll be nice to have a source where you can go to and find out if something is true or not. I'll let you guys make the call on this one. So there's an ad out there about, and you know how political ads are. I'm not a big fan of political ads that claim a bunch of things anyway, but they work apparently. We heard a bunch in this last cycle. Remember Bill Igel? Bill Igel's been on our roundtable panel. He's this guy I know pretty well, state senator. Man, he was the devil incarnate, according to his opponent. And some of the stuff that was said in there was just nonsense, and that's what happens. But in this particular case, let's play this ad, which is attacking Joe Biden's tax plans.
Sometimes politicians accidentally tell the truth.
Guess what? If you elect me, I'm not going to have your taxes are going to be raised, not cut.
And it's true. The New York Times says Biden's tax increases are more than double Hillary Clinton's plan. Even the Tax Policy Center admits taxes would increase on all income groups.
If you elect me, I'm not going to have your taxes are going to be raised, not cut.
Big tax increases crushing our recovery.
It could go higher.
America First Action is responsible for the content of this advertising.
So PolitiFact, which is, I guess, a subsidiary of the Poynter Institute, which claims to be nonpartisan, puts this out. Ad says Joe Biden told Americans, if you elect me, your taxes are going to be raised, not cut. Ad attacking Joe Biden's tax plan takes his comments out of context. Really? Let's play the whole comments there, not the ad, Dale. Let's just play the comments from this event, which took place earlier. I think this was earlier this year. This was, I can get you the circumstances here. I'll do this. It was South Carolina where he said this. All right, here we go.
Hey, how many of you did really well with that $1.9 trillion tax cut that increased? Really good shape, right? Really changed your, well, you did. Well, that's good. I'm glad to see you're doing well already. And I'm good. But guess what? If you elect me, I'm not going to have your taxes are going to be raised, not cut, if you benefit from that.
Well, I don't even know where to start there. So the The PolitiFact rebuttal says America First Action's portrayal of Biden's comments gives the impression that Biden told the crowd that all Americans would have their tax rates raised on his watch. Dave, let's play the bite that you just played. Let's just play the first part of that again here.
How many of you did really well with that $1.9 trillion tax cut that increased?
Stop the tape right there. Stop the. Well, that tax cut was for everyone, wasn't it? It's for everyone. So if Joe Biden, well, I mean, it's certainly not a tax, although it's not a tax cut for people who don't pay taxes. Actually, that was a tax benefit for the people who don't pay income taxes anyway. They got a bonus out of it even beyond the cut. I got a small cut. Some people got a bigger cut. But people got their taxes cut. Nancy Pelosi and Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and the rest of the field has been promising for 3 years now to immediately reverse. This is something that's always fascinated me about Democrats. They did it with the Bush tax cuts, too. We don't like tax cuts. We're going to raise your taxes. And then when an ad comes out that basically tells people that Joe Biden admitted he's going to raise taxes, and they say it's fake? Well, because Uncle Joe came out with his plan, and his plan claims, this is where PolitiFact should get involved, his plan claims that nobody who makes under $400,000 would be affected, really. Because a lot of people who made under $400,000 got a tax cut from President Trump and the Republicans. Maybe it wasn't as big. I mean, I wasn't a big fan of all that. Some of that, I think, could have been more targeted. But the bottom line is that it was tax relief. And if you're campaigning and if you tell someone in South Carolina or elsewhere that you're going to get rid of those, that's pretty much raising taxes on everyone. So you can't have it both ways, especially when the math doesn't work out. This nonsense that you're only going to pay more in a wealth tax or over $400,000 a year, that doesn't even begin to scratch the surface when it comes to using the money from those tax increases for whatever Joe Biden and Kamala Harris want to use it for. That's just interesting. And stuff like that is going to continue to happen. All right, let me, I love this story about California. And, you know, I'm often very, very happy that I don't live in Illinois or California or New York. Sorry for those of you who are disenfranchised, you live in Illinois. I'm glad I live in Missouri because we typically don't do stupid, nonsensical things like this. So, you know, we've talked about the 1619 Project, at the New York Times, which is revisionist history of race and the founding of this country. It's been extremely, well, it's been exposed as being extremely biased. I think that a lot of people knew going in that it was going to be that way. So last year in California, they passed something called the Ethnic Studies Bill by a vote of 63-8, the Assembly. 63-8. The Democratic supermajority balked in the Senate. The curriculum that they had passed at the time, amongst other things, said that within ethnic studies, scholars are often very critical of the system of capitalism, as research has shown that Native people and people of color are disproportionately exploited within the system. So the bill's put on ice, but now you got George Floyd, and you have Jacob Blake, and you got all these people right now talking about racial division, right? So now the Education Department has delivered a new draft model in California. AB 331 has been revived. It passed the Senate committee a couple of weeks ago. It's expected to go before the full Senate soon. And if Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, signs it, this would require all school districts to offer semester-long ethnic studies classes starting in 2025. Now, this is for kindergarten kids. This is for first graders, second graders, third graders. This is K through 12. It suggests that teachers provide examples. This is going to go well. Let me tell you something. Examples of systems of power, which can include economic systems like capitalism and social systems like patriarchy. Students can then be taught the four eyes of oppression: ideological, institutional, interpersonal, internalized. The state guidance includes more than 200 pages of approved course outlines. Some of those seem to mandate student political activities. Students acquire tools to become positive actors in their communities to address a contemporary issue and present findings in a public forum. Among the approved topics for kindergarten, first grade, second grade, third grade, I mean, some of this stuff, I guess you have to let go of in high school. That's fine, but is this appropriate for my daughter who's in kindergarten? Among the approved topics, racism, LGBTQ rights. I know Alexa Reardon at 5 years old, very concerned about that. She's been protesting. immigration rights. She's all worked up about that. She's got a Build the Wall t-shirt that she regularly wears to Goddard. Access to quality health care. My daughter definitely is a Medicare for all person. There's no doubt about that. Income equality. Alexa Reardon, 5 years old, definitely for a $15 universal minimum wage. And then that raises the question, as the Wall Street Journal opinion section brought up yesterday, indoctrination. What about that fifth eye, right? Ideological, institutional, interpersonal, internalized indoctrination. One of the big fears that I have moving through virtual schooling, which is playing itself out right now to a certain extent, I'm not talking about specifically to my daughter right now, is I'm worried about the indoctrination. I see it amongst the books. We have an app that's pretty cool. Epic is the name of the app. There's all kinds of books up there. Now, I've only glanced at it, but look, there's some stuff in there that certainly I think has a political point. There's no doubt about that. But it's just nonsense. Now, this is going to probably pass in California. Gavin Newsom is going to sign it. And just think about that. That's what they're going to do. They're going to make sure that the kids in California who have been brainwashed up until this point anyway will be brainwashed even further. That's what education is going to become about in this country, unless you're in a state like Missouri or in the South or in the Midwest, like maybe Wisconsin or Indiana. But Illinois, I'm surprised they probably have something like this already in the state of Illinois. They did it with LGBTQ rights with their curriculum, I think, already. So we'll keep an eye on that. 316, there was something else here that I just thought of that I was going to raise a point about, and I can't even remember what it is. And that happens at a certain age. There's no doubt about that. We'll take a break, though. We're coming back here. We still have much more to get to this afternoon. At the bottom of the hour, Pat Hagan's going to be with me. He's the managing partner of the pageant, Delmar Hall. I miss music so much. There's an effort out there. It's a bipartisan effort. Republicans, Democrats in the Senate, save our stages. And I think it's very important. We're going to talk about that coming up at 3:30. We had a newbie that we broke into the panel last week on the roundtable, State Representative Mary Elizabeth Coleman. And she's been involved in the mask mandate that has been ordered in Jefferson County that they've gone back and forth on. An update on that coming up next on KMOX.
Mark Reardon now.
No, never. Yes, always.
Total Information PM at 4 on KMOX.
You know, I thought about what I was going to say about virtual schooling, and I have purposefully not gone into my experiences with virtual schooling too much, only because, look, I know many of you don't have kids, so you don't care anymore. You're past that. I thought I was past that with my older kids, but I have a five-year-old right now. But it's tough for a lot of parents. I'm hearing from a lot of parents. I see the action on Twitter. You know, Megan Lynch at our own news department today, I got to find this because I thought this was pretty good, and I certainly resonated with me, given the nature of where we are right now with virtual schooling, because she said basically, let's see if I can get to this, because I wanted to make sure that I read the tweet appropriately. So this is what happens with a bunch of, anyway, the point was, is that she's gotten to the point with virtual schooling where, you know, if she can get by the day without tears, that's a win. And here's the tweet. She said, decided to downgrade my expectations for remote learning. If we can get through the day without someone crying in front of their Chromebook, we've achieved. I think that's absolutely right. You know, my daughter today was having a great time. I'm trying to give her as much of the live Zoom calls as we can. She's got a great teacher at Rockwood, Mrs. Wolf. Fantastic. We love her teacher. But she sits there on the Zoom call, and then we get to, you know, 10 o'clock. So she's on from 8:30. There's a bit of a break. We're supposed to do writing at 10 o'clock. She's like, she wants to play on her app, on her math app. She doesn't want to do the writing. I'm like, babe, it's you got to do school. And she's like, I want to go to Goddard, because she's being supplemented right now just because we need help. So she still goes to Goddard. That's what she wanted to do. She wanted to play with her friends. Well, can I be mad at her for wanting to do that and for wanting to do math on her iPad? I can't get mad at the kid for that. So I hope what I'm hearing is right. You know, there's rumors out there about K through third graders getting back a lot sooner here, maybe sooner than expected. And I hope that Dr. Page and others are paying attention, because now, again, it doesn't help you that have fourth, fifth, or sixth graders. I realize that, or high school kids, but it is a bit of a mess right now. All right, let's get to the mask mandate in Jefferson County. We talked about this just a little bit the other day with Mary Elizabeth Coleman, state rep. She was a newbie on the roundtable panel. She's with me this afternoon. You mentioned at the time, Mary Elizabeth, thanks for coming on this afternoon, that you were involved in a lawsuit that, you know, went to the heart of how they passed this because of a potential sunshine law violation. So kind of give us the update of where we are right now and where we were last week.
Yeah, sure. So I was preparing to file a lawsuit when we last spoke on the roundtable on Thursday evening without providing appropriate notice and some other sunshine concerns. The board purported to pass a mask mandate in Jefferson County. And I was watching the convention. My phone started to kind of get a few messages, a few texts. And I told everyone, listen, I looked at the agenda. There was not an ordinance on there. There was supposed to be a resolution in support of mitigation efforts, but don't worry about it. It's fine. Turned my phone off, and the next morning when I logged on, I saw, well, by goodness, they did purport to pass a mask ordinance and didn't have even the language published. So my phone was, as you can imagine, blowing up with pastors and principals and business owners saying, we can't even see the language of what we're supposed to comply with less than a business day's notice. Reasonable people can disagree about whether the mask ordinances are the thing to do. But in a crisis or not, all of those procedural due processes are in place to make sure that people can meaningfully participate in the process and that we've got transparency in government. And so I wrote an open letter, I think at like 10:30 on Friday morning. I had been trying to reach Director Vollmer all morning. I think that the people at the Jefferson County Health Department have been working tirelessly for the last 6 or 7 months. They're trying really, really hard to do the right thing. But you can't ask Jefferson County to comply without even one business day's notice, and nobody had seen the language. So when it was 12:30 and I still hadn't seen the language, I sent out a press release. It's a little bit stronger wording and then finally was able to get Director Vollmer on the phone as well as one of the board members on the Jefferson County Health Board and let them know that, listen, guys, there's some real problems with the way that this was passed. And I had some real procedural concerns, and not as an elected, but as a taxpayer in Jefferson County, I was preparing to file a lawsuit to keep it from going into place. At 2:55, the board called an emergency meeting for 3:00. They ended up not meeting until almost 4:00 because they were waiting for one of the board members. Nobody was able to attend that meeting except for one reporter for the Jefferson County Leader. I'm not quite sure how she was able to get the link, but nobody else was, via Zoom. And in a 4-minute meeting, they undid the mask mandate. So listen, that's fine, because undoing something that wasn't properly done was maybe the right play, but I think that they undid it in a way that also wasn't the appropriate way, right? And so it's been a bit of a mess in Jefferson County, and people are a little bit have whiplash about what happened last week and where things stand today.
Yeah, and I do think the transparency issue is probably even more important given the nature of where we are right now with a lot of different things, including the pandemic. But Kelly Vollmer, you mentioned her, she's the health director, says she doesn't think there was a sunshine law violation. How is that possible, given the fact that this was pretty much the definition of a sunshine law violation?
Well, I mean, she's in a position where if she admits that there's a sunshine violation, she's opening up the board to all kinds of personal liability. So I understand that she's saying that that's where she's at. She's not a lawyer. You know, she's an administrator. I know people want to throw stones. I'm not in that camp. I think that people are trying to build the airplane while they're flying it and to make good decisions. But this was clearly outside of the lines of where we should be as a county. And you know, we can't kind of wring our hands and bemoan about a lack of trust in our institutions while we're also continuing to make decisions that don't let people meaningfully participate, right? And so they did admit in their statement that got published, I think yesterday, that came out a press release that said, you know, they don't think there was a sunshine violation, but there were concerns about process and procedure, and so they went ahead and undid it. I don't know. My hope is that they're going to have the attorney general reteach the sunshine class that all elected officials have to sit in on. You know, when I was on Arnold City Council in 2013, I think the very first thing you do as an elected is watch that class. And it's not difficult to comply with, but it is really important that we do so.
State Representative Mary Elizabeth Coleman, thank you so much. And keep us posted on this. Keep up the fight, and we'll see what happens in Jeffco. Thank you very
Thanks,
much,
Mark.
Mary Elizabeth. And a great job on the roundtable. We got a lot of great reviews from her appearance on the roundtable. That's always a good thing, because then you get invited back. You don't always get invited back. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. She'll be invited back. We'll come back here in just a couple of moments. We got one more segment to go on the Mark Reardon Show, plus an audio cut of the day as well. Having said that, I really don't know what I'm doing at 3:30, so let me check on that. Maybe I do, maybe I don't. Oh, Pat Hagan, I've talked about that. This is big, too. It's the Save Our Stages Act, and I want to talk about music a little bit, so we'll get to that.
News Radio 1120, KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
This is one of my favorite bands, Same Hotel, Sweet Talk from 2016. They played Del Mar Hall, I think, right before all this came crashing down with COVID at the end of February. And I'm just devastated for my friends who are musicians. Really, I'm devastated for myself because we don't get to see, and for those of you out there who don't get to see live music, but I'm devastated for my friends. Had lunch with Neil Sosik from the Mighty Pines. They were able to do a virtual show for their album release a few months ago. I have friends that tour internationally, like Griffin House, Liz Longley, Anthony D'Amato, Greg Laswell. All these people have become friends of mine over the years, and they play venues like Del Mar Hall and the Duck Room and all of this, and I don't know what they're going to do for the next year. So there is an effort afoot out there, and I want to throw some support this afternoon to it because I realize that everyone's going to want a handout. You know, there's so many industries are going to need money because they can't survive, but I don't even know what my life would be like without music. I was a music radio guy who was inspired to go into radio and the music business because of rock and roll, and it provides entertainment and relief to me, and I think a lot of you as well. Pat Hagan is here from the Paget this afternoon, and Pat, I think Save Our Stages is a worthy effort. I hope we can get some attention. First and foremost, how are you holding up?
Oh, you know, we're hanging in there. It's you try to stay optimistic at times like this, but it's tough, and it's even tougher for some of the smaller venues around town, the off Broadways, the Red Flags, Jazz at the Bistro, and old rock house places like that. So it's incredibly hard for them, and it's really tough for us too, even at our level.
Do you see a scenario, I hate to be so pessimistic here, but do you see a scenario where we'll have live music at Del Mar Hall or the Paget with crowds even next year into 2021?
Well, it depends on how you define crowds and what type of music. I mean, I think there's a chance that in a greatly reduced seated format that some of the venues, and I think the old rock house has already announced a couple, that sort of thing can happen, but that's going to be the local musicians performing, which is great because, you know, God knows they need income right now also. But as far as touring national acts, you know, get on a tour bus and pull the trailer behind you type of thing, I think easy into next summer before anything like that starts to happen. So, and that's maybe slightly optimistic. I don't know at this point.
I think it might be. I hope we get some surprises. Look, I didn't think we'd have baseball. I didn't think we'd have football. We might very well have football. So we'll see what happens. Let's talk about Save Our Stages. You can find out information at hashtag Save Our Stages on social media, saveourstages.com. I support this.
Right.
It's a bipartisan effort. There are Democrats like Amy Klobuchar behind this. There are Republicans in the Senate who are behind this. What would this do, and what are you asking people to do if they support this?
Well, yeah, I think Roy Blunt, Senator Blunt, has signed on to this, along with Illinois, Senator Durbin and Senator Duckworth. And I think Josh Hawley is the only one yet that we're still hoping to get. We're trying to build as much momentum as possible. The Restart Act will hopefully be part, and that's what all this is directed towards. You've got different organizations like Save Our Stages and We Make Events and that sort of thing who are focused on the Restart Act and getting that enacted. And what the Restart Act will do will target businesses like ours, and not just the music industry, but a lot of the hospitality, a lot of the service industries, a little more precisely than previous COVID programs. Because, you know, as an example, with the PPP previously, it required that you spend most of it on your staff. And we've been dark, and most of the venues around town have been dark since early March. And so there's really, you know, it's not a practical way to apply the funds. And we're not just looking for a handout either. I mean, we're hoping for like substantial loans from the SBA and help that way, and maybe just, you know, a little bit of understanding on the length of time to pay the loans back and that sort of thing. We all believe in this business. We're all you know, in this business because we love it, and all these venues around town make a big difference to the area that they're in. I mean, the amount of
Absolutely.
Restaurants that spring up around them and the amount of tax dollars generated, and it's all incredibly important. And we're just hoping that the Congress comes together and makes this a priority.
You know, maybe I'm a little bit of an outlier because I'm in my mid-50s, but I hit shows all the time. Old Rock House, Delmar Hall, Off-Broadway, Verizon Wireless, you name it. And I miss it so much. And I know a lot of my friends that I hang with that are music fans. You know, I got my speakers and my vinyl right now, but I don't have live music outside of some of the virtual shows. And I think a lot of the artists are doing a great job to stay in touch with the fans. But the bottom line is, Pat, if something isn't done, these venues that these artists depend on to grow into bigger artists to play a location like the Pageant. I've seen so many acts get up there on the stage at the Pageant just thrilled that they have their shot after playing the Duck Room or after playing now Del Mar, because that hasn't always been around, or playing the smaller venues. There's an achievement to that as you keep growing, and those smaller venues are vital to these musicians.
Yeah, there's an ecosystem in St. Louis, and that ecosystem spreads across the entire country. I mean, every town and city is in the same boat, where, you know, the smaller clubs feed the mid-sized clubs, mid-sized clubs feed the large clubs, and then on to the, you know, auditoriums and arenas and that sort of thing.
Well, good luck with it, and I'll certainly shed as much light as I possibly can, and I'll work on Senator Hawley as well, because I think it's a worthwhile effort, and a lot of us are just devastated by the loss of music right now. A lot of good albums
coming
out.
That would be great.
So, you know, the one thing I will say is, when all this is said and done, if we get to people touring again, there's a lot of creativity going on in studios and artists that are starting to release some music. So I think if we get live music, Pat, it's going to be pretty amazing. Just I think about this, and maybe other people. I think about that moment where I'm at that first concert and how magical that's going to be, whether it's in a small venue or a large venue, because that's going to be a celebration, and everyone is going to have that celebration eventually. Pat Hagan from the Pageant. Thanks so much, Pat. Good luck with everything. We're here to help.
Thanks, Mark.
3:45 at the Voice of St. Louis. And by the way, there's some music stuff with some CMA nominations that came out today. We'll get to that. We'll also have an audio cut of the day. Let's stand down in your country song. Man, I love this Eric Church song, and he got a bunch of CMA nominations today. However, Dave Klein, you're an Eric Church fan. I don't think he was nominated for anything that he's put out this year. He actually just released another song on Friday. But this song, which I think has vaulted to number one on the country music charts, I don't think is involved in the CMA Awards. That would probably be right, because basically it's for everything that happened last year, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you're
isn't
right.
Isn't
that
how they do these
things? Yes.
So Eric Church, Entertainer of the Year, Luke Combs, Miranda Lambert, Carrie Underwood, Keith Urban, a lot of the usual suspects in here. Female Vocalist of the Year. Let's play a little Miranda here, because I like her new album a lot. And I'm expecting she might be the winner here. Ashley McBride, Maren Morris, Casey Musgraves, Carrie Underwood also nominated. Let's listen a little bit of this here. I like this song from the Miranda Lambert record that was out maybe even last year, I guess. Ow! All right, Male Vocalist of the Year, Eric Church, Luke Combs, Thomas Rhett, Chris Stapleton, Keith Urban. Dave, you heard the new Stapleton song too, right, that he dropped last week?
Yeah, he actually did a really good interview on CBS This Morning about the album too, and how it all came together kind of right before everything happened with the coronavirus pandemic.
But he has not released the record yet, right? It's just
That's correct, the single, the record, right now starting over?
Yeah,
record comes out in November.
Man. Let's pull that starting over for later in the week. When we get to music on Friday, that will be my pick of the week. And then I mentioned Eric Church, his new song, Crazy Land, is out too. Let's see, new artist of the year. We'll just run with this and we'll get to cut of the day. Jimmy Allen, Ingrid Address, Gabby Barrett, Carly Pierce, Morgan Wallen. Let's do, I know I had you pull Maren Morris, so let's pull a little Maren Morris and play that before we get to cut of the day, because she was nominated for Female Vocalist of the Year. Big song from 2019 and early part of 2020. 3:54, let's do cut of the day.
next.
Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Cut of the Day is sponsored by the Good Feet Store, pain relief and comfort to fit any budget. So I mentioned this earlier. There was a story, a headline in the New York Times. Well, it was just, it was a tweet. So it made me, it literally made me, you know, spit Diet Coke out of my nose, because it said something along the lines, as right-wing groups increasingly move to confront protesters, demonstrators are assessing how to keep themselves safe. Yeah, demonstrators are assessing that. So Kayleigh McEnany, before the White House press corps yesterday, sort of had this mic drop moment.
So interesting to me to see Democrats who once disparaged, who ignored the violence, I should say, all of a sudden caring about it. But let's not forget what they said previously. Speaker Nancy Pelosi downplaying the violence rocking U.S. cities, ignorantly saying people will do what they do. Jerry Nadler, when asked about Antifa, he said that was a myth that's being spread around Washington, D.C. It's not a myth. In fact, an Antifa individual took the life of an innocent Trump supporter in Portland. You have Rep. Ayanna Pressley saying that she wanted unrest in the streets. Chris Cuomo saying, show me where it says protesters are supposed to be peaceful. I'll give you an idea, Chris. It's the Constitution. Don Lemon saying, quote, the rioting has to stop, Chris, as you know, and I know. It's showing up in the polls. It's showing up in the focus groups. It's the only thing right now that's sticking. So now, all of a sudden, 90 days later, I, from this podium, have talked about law and order. The president has talked about law and order repeatedly. But because the polling has shifted, now it's time for the Democrats to deny what they said previously and all of a sudden focus on law and order. I'll leave you with this. That's like the arsonist blaming the firefighter.
And look, people, there's a lot of dumb people out there, but I think for the most part, people know what's going on, and they're not going to be fooled by that. That's why the Democrats are in a bit of panic mode. They see people flipping right now that even 2 months ago probably insisted they were not going to flip. That's your audio cut of the day for this Tuesday afternoon. We have Total Information PM, a chat with John Rooney coming up at 4:20, Cardinals baseball at 4:40 from Cincinnati.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.